pilots are treading cautiously in comments about the United Continental merger. The Machinists Union warns its members must be satisfied. And Falcon 9 is a go for next week. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, May 4th, 2010. It wasn't long after the opening of business yesterday morning before reaction to the announced merger of United and Continental Airlines started rolling in. The union groups representing pilots of both airlines are urging caution, while the Machinists Union is a little more negative. Wendy Morse and Captain Jay Pierce, the respective chairs of the United and Continental Master Executive Councils within the Airline Pilots Association, said the integration of two legacy carriers is always challenging. Quote, "The futures of our pilots must also be more secure going forward, both in our careers and in retirement. We have sacrificed too much through the years of concessions, furloughs, pension freezes, and terminations to accept unwarranted risk, and any risk requires reward." Unquote. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, through General VP Robert Roach Jr., offered this warning, quote, "A Continental-United combination must have what many past mergers failed to achieve, broad employee support. The machinists will work closely with members of Congress and the Departments of Transportation and Justice to ensure that if a merger is approved, it will not be at the expense of workers at either carrier. The IAM's transportation merger team has been evaluating a possible United-Continental pairing since United Airlines exited bankruptcy in 2006. Our concerns include the impact of such a merger on the pensions, benefits, seniority, and job security of employees at both carriers. As this process moves forward, these issues must be addressed to our member satisfaction." Unquote. In their Sunday announcement, the two companies said they hope to be able to close the deal by the end of this year. We've been waiting for word on the scheduling of the first launch of the SpaceX Falcon 9 demo rocket ever since April 12th was mentioned as a possibility. The company now tells Florida Today it will try next week, with a dummy of the company's Dragon spacecraft on board. The Dragon is designed for resupply missions to the International Space Station. This first test will demonstrate orbital insertion, a benchmark required by NASA, before automated docking with the space station is attempted. Much is riding on this launch. SpaceX founder Elon Musk describes it as, quote, "like opening on Broadway," unquote. For President Barack Obama, who has staked much politically on a transition to the private sector for low Earth orbit missions, the launch could provide either strong validation or more ammo for his critics. The working schedule now calls for a launch a week from today. SpaceX has said the Dragon vehicle has been designed with the ultimate goal of transporting not just cargo, but crews to the ISS. Up next on ANN, the FAA is back to fight yet another round against Air Trek. Bombardier celebrates an amphibious milestone. And Jazz Air is getting more Q400s. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 4th. I'm Paul Plack. Air Trek, the Florida Air Medical and Executive Charter Company, grounded by the FAA for 15 months on charges of maintenance violations, successfully defended itself and got its operating certificate back in August. But 65 people lost their jobs for over a year in the meantime. Co-owner Dana Carr called it a horrible nightmare, estimated lost revenues at $10 million, and noted that his company had a violation-free 30-year track record up to that point. An NTSB judge finally ordered the FAA to pay $122,000 in legal expenses to Air Trek, and the company is back in operation, although it's only been able to rehire less than half its laid-off employees so far. But now, the Sarasota Herald-Tribune reports the FAA is appealing and trying to suspend Carr's pilot certificate and is refusing to discuss the matter without a Freedom of Information Act request. Dana Carr is calling it retribution. There will be more to report. You don't hear or see much about them, but Bombardier calls its amphibian the world's most efficient firefighting aircraft. Somebody must agree, because deliveries of Bombardier's various amphibian types recently passed the 200 mark. Number 201 was a Model 415, delivered to the government of Newfoundland and Labrador. It's the first of four of the amphibs ordered by the government in 2009 to at least partially replace its aging fleet of CL-215s. The Bombardier 415 in firefighting trim has a normal cruise speed of 180 knots. In an average mission of 6 nautical miles distance from water to fire, it can deliver over 14,000 U.S. gallons of fire suppressant in 9 drops within an hour. Bombardier also reports that Jazz Air of Nova Scotia has signed a firm purchase agreement for 15 Q400 next-gen turboprop airliners and has taken options on another 15. At list prices, that works out to $454 million, or $937 million if all the options are exercised. Jazz CEO Joseph Randall says his airline's configuration, quote, will have 74 seats in a single-class cabin, offers superior passenger comfort, fuel efficiency, and improved environmental performance. I'm confident that our passengers will appreciate the quiet interior and speed of this new technology, unquote. Bombardier says this makes 378 firm orders for the Q400 and Q400 next-gen aircraft. The company had delivered 288 of the planes as of January 1st. Still ahead, an Iowa storm trashes more than a dozen airplanes. Gulfstream's G650 makes it to Mach 0.925. And NASA chooses partners for summer programs for students. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation, the Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, May 4th. I'm Paul Platt. Folks in Iowa are patching up Dubuque Regional Airport after a severe thunderstorm last Thursday leveled one hangar and damaged two others. Airport officials say 13 to 15 general aviation airplanes were damaged by the windstorm and debris, despite wind gusts being reported by the control tower at a relatively unimpressive-sounding 50 miles an hour. Airport manager Todd Dalsing told KCRG-TV, many of the planes will likely be unsalvageable. Quote, in my 17 years here, I have never seen damage to this extent, unquote. Gulfstream is reporting its big new G650 test aircraft has now flown at its top speed of Mach 0.925. The speed was reached at 42,000 feet over Savannah, Georgia on Sunday. Chief Test Pilot John O'Meara later commented about the flight, quote, the G650 excelled at its top speed. It's very responsive to pilot input with fantastic maneuver capabilities. Turns can be initiated and completed without any onset of buffet, unquote. That top speed was predicted when Gulfstream first announced the model in March of 2008, saying it would be the world's fastest transport category aircraft. The plane is expected to receive certification from the FAA and EASA next year and enter service in 2012. Finally today, NASA has picked partners in four states for its 2010 Summer of Innovation program, which seeks to incentivize middle school students in groups which typically underperform in the STEM disciplines, that's science, technology, engineering, and math. As part of the New Mexico Space Grant Consortium's proposal, middle school teachers and students will design and build experiments that study science and engineering problems in suborbital space. Students will launch their experiments on a sounding rocket from Spaceport America in Las Cruces. The proposal from the Massachusetts Space Grant Consortium will focus on providing robotics, Earth and space science, astrophysics, and engineering missions to a broad and diverse population of middle school students and teachers. NASA has also selected the Wyoming Space Grant Consortium's proposal for a statewide intensive interactive program about climate change that culminates in the development of functional wind turbines and weather stations. The Idaho Space Grant Consortium's proposal will expose students from tribal reservations in Idaho, Montana, and Utah to planetary science and robotics, but with a focus on cultural relevance and sensitivities. Maybe it's just me, but I imagine Ike and the guys who created ARPA looking down and shaking their heads about now. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Jay Carter Jr. of Carter Aviation Technologies explains the terms of his development loan from Wichita Falls and how the Carter Personal Air Vehicles development is important to his company's licensing deal with AAI. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.